Walters is the spot in Navy Yard to watch the Caps this postseason. Game 4 Sunday night at 8, they tried to avoid being swept. Walters is located across the street from Nationals Park.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
O'Shea to the belt. Right-hander delivers, and a swing and a line drive into center field, a base hit. Lipscomb scores from third, rounding third, Abrams coming home. Throw to the plate, the dive, the tag, safe at the plate is Abrams. It's a single to center, and two runs batted in for Joey Vanessis. Stopping at second was Winker. The Nationals have broken the tie here in the eighth. It's Washington 3 and Miami 1.
What a slide by Abrams for the second run. The ball was there, the dive of the tag. He did the swim move. He pulled the left arm back, reached with the right arm, and got his hand on the plate before the tag applied by Fortes on the dive.
And welcome to Nats Chat for Saturday, April 27th, 2024. Along with MassinSports.com, Nationals insider Mark Zuckerman, I'm Al Galdi, host of the Al Galdi podcast. The Nats on Friday night had game one of a four-game series, the rare four-game series that begins on a Friday and runs through a Monday. And this is a four-game series that may just be the perfect cure for the hangover that is getting swept by the Los Angeles Dodgers in three games at Nationals Park this week. A four-game series at the Miami Marlins, who have the worst record in the National League, and sure enough, the Nats on Friday night got off to a good start in this four-game series, a 3-1 win. You look at each team in this regular season now, the Nats are 11-14, which is made up of being 7-6 on the road, winning record on the road versus 4-8 at home. The Marlins are a National League worst 6-21. If you would like to sponsor the Nats Chat Podcast, email Tim Shovers at natschatpodcast@gmail.com. You could sponsor the show for a particular game or series or for longer. We do a show for the day after every Nats game day. Mark, this game on Friday night featured 14 hits, all of which were singles. The game featured more good work from Trevor Williams. The game featured really good work from the Nats bullpen. It is true that the Nats offense remains in a not-so-good way, but the Nats run prevention on Friday night was quite good.
And it's why they keep giving themselves a chance to win these games, whether it's against bad teams like the Marlins or good teams like the Dodgers. The starting pitching the last two turns through, I'd say, has been excellent. And the bullpen, there have been a couple of blips along the way, but for the most part, I think it's been very good. The defense has been outstanding, I think, consistently. And it's giving them a chance. And it just feels like every single game right now boils down to, can somebody, anybody come through with a big hit when they really need one? All night long, they were waiting for that hit. It finally fell into the lap of Joey Meneses, and he finally came through with it. And that was enough to win this game. It felt like that's all they needed to beat this team on this night. And good for Joey, good for the team for pulling that off. You know, they're better than the Marlins. I think that's probably safe to say. But there's no guarantee of that they're going to actually win these games, especially when they have a lineup that just doesn't score runs in bunches. And so you better make the most of whatever chances you get. Took full advantage, finally, of that great chance they had in the eighth inning.
And the Nats in this game caught a break in terms of the opposing starting pitching. The former Nats prospect, Jesus Luzardo, he was supposed to be the Marlins starting pitcher. He was scratched from this start, was to undergo testing for elbow discomfort. So even with that, the Nats offense not doing much, but the pitching did plenty, and it really did stand out. Now, like we said, the Marlins are not good, but whatever. Credit where credit is due. Trevor Williams had another good start in this game, and we pretty clearly now are seeing the Trevor Williams formula. Get him in, get him out while the getting's still good. But the getting has been good here to begin this season for him. He in this game on Friday night, one run in five innings. He gave up five hits, all of which were singles. He issued two walks and a balk. He recorded just one strikeout. He threw a good number of balls, 80 pitches, 46 strikes, 34 balls. So the peripherals are, you know, nothing to write home about, but he continues to be effective. And you take a step back and you look at where we are with Trevor Williams in this regular season. Five starts, the ERA is down to 2.70. The WHIP is at 1.05. He continues to do more than I think you could have realistically hoped for.
Yeah, I mean, think about coming into the season, what the feeling was about Trevor Williams. You weren't even sure if he deserved to be the number five starter. Talk of him going to the bullpen right off the bat, or, you know, how short would the leash be if he had a couple of bad starts? Would that be the end of it? And to his credit, he has done an outstanding job. He's done exactly what they need him to do. Doesn't have to be dominant, although at times it has kind of looked dominant, but get them through five, keep the damage to a minimum, and then go to the bullpen and hope that they can do the job for you. And I feel a little bad for him. He doesn't have more wins because he's actually deserved several. He could arguably could have a win in every one of his five starts so far, and I think he only has two. But he's done what they need him to do. And I don't know what, in his mind, you know, he's thinking to himself. But I would hope that he's thinking, number one, don't feel bad about them pulling him at, you know, once you get through the fifth or sometimes into the sixth. Like, be grateful. You're doing a good job. It's keeping the stats good. You're giving your team a chance to win. And then number two, you got to be thinking to yourself, this could be helping him extend his career in some way, whether it means he's traded later on or if he keeps it up for a good portion of the season, another contract next year. This is a guy who, with a bad year and maybe being dropped by a team that, you know, is not really a contender and losing his rotation spot, that's going to put him in a really difficult position next offseason. So if I'm him, I'm thinking to myself, this is my career on the line kind of this season. And he has come through and done the job that Trevor Williams is kind of supposed to do. He's not being more than he's supposed to be. He's just being the guy that he's supposed to be. And that's fine. That's been great for them.
I also think that in the current MOB, the shame, the stigma of being a so-called five and dive guy, I really think that that's evaporating. A lot of guys now are five and dive guys, if we're being honest about it. That used to be a real insult. You call a guy a five and dive guy. I don't think you should look at it that way anymore. I think more and more that's what pitchers are. And if that's what you are, I think you kind of embrace it. And, you know, the point is, when you're out there, do you prevent runs? And he's doing that so far this season. So, you know, I don't think he has anything to be ashamed of in that regard. You know, we are still early in the regular season, but I always find it interesting to look at the BABIP allowed by pitchers, you know, kind of see, okay, who's benefiting from good luck, who's being plagued by bad luck. It's interesting. A lot of Nats starting pitchers have high BABIPs allowed. So there is, you know, an implication there that there is some bad luck happening, so that some of these guys have been even better than you might think. So like Mackenzie Gore's BABIP allowed so far for this regular season is 400. So you'd say, all right, Mackenzie Gore has been pretty good. That's even with a BABIP allowed of 400. Jake Irvin's BABIP allowed 333. 300 is kind of like the industry standard. So if you're above that, you say, okay, the pitcher has been hit by maybe some unfortunate luck. The BABIP allowed for Trevor Williams, 270. So there is a little bit maybe of good luck here. Like we said, the peripherals, they don't slap you across the face of, wow, this guy has been great. But again, whatever, it doesn't matter. Trevor Williams probably is not here to be in the rotation for the duration of the regular season. We don't think, at least if things go as they're supposed to go. I mean, hopefully he does pitch his way into being a trade chip. But off what we saw last season, I mean, last season was really rough with what ended up happening with him. To see him off to this start is nice, and you hope that it continues. And for now, it's exactly what I think you could have realistically wanted.
Now, as you've pointed out, he did get off to a decent start last year until about mid-May or so, I think, is when it kind of fell apart on him. Now, this has been better than that. I think the ERA there was maybe in the mid to low threes, and he's down at 270 right now. But you love what you've seen so far. Now you want to see, okay, can he continue that to any extent and avoid falling off that cliff? Now, the hope all along has been that if he really wore down last year, being back in the rotation for the first time in a couple of years, and that was the issue, that the idea is that he shouldn't have that issue as much this year, having a full season of starting under his belt, really working this offseason on trying to build himself up more so that he's better equipped to handle the workload. And you're seeing them being very careful with him and not pushing him too far. So let's see, can he do this for another month? April was great for him. If he can do this in May, you've really got something going. And as far as the low BABIP goes, you know, I think it's a good point. I think the other thing to point out, well, two things. Number one, they're getting great defense. And I think that's helping a lot. When you have pitch to contact guys, as other than Mackenzie Gore is, you better have good defense behind you. And they're getting that. So number one. Number two, he's avoiding the home run. That was his issue last year. Pitches up in the zone, just getting hammered. And so far this year, that has not been the case. He's had some favorable matchups, which is maybe helping a little bit, but good. Take advantage of it. It didn't even feel like in this game there were any of those like, ooh, you're like nervous for a moment. Oh, it's kind of going south on him. Or boy, that was some loud contact. It was mostly weak contact, mostly on the ground. So good for him for pitching to his strengths, let's say.
Yeah, to put some numbers to what you were just saying, Williams for last regular season gave up a National League worst 34 home runs. And to your point, the home run really has not been an issue so far this season. And first 11 starts last regular season, ERA of 3.93. So yeah, the ERA was like under four, which is good, but not as good as the 2.70 we're looking at right now. So he was good in April and May, and then he was really bad in June, July, August, and September of last year. So we'll see what happens this season. One school let out last year. That's when the problem started for Trevor Williams. But so far, so very good.
Tim Shover's here to tell you about Game Time. This summer at Jiffy Lube Live, acts include Neil Young, Hank Williams Jr., and Chris Stapleton. If you're interested in finding tickets to any of these shows, make sure to check out the Game Time app. Game Time is the only ticketing app that gives you complete peace of mind with your purchase. See the view from your seat before you buy, so you know exactly what to expect when you arrive. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code NATSCHAT for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code NATSCHAT for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Anderson lined to right into a double play back in the second. Single to right center, struck out swinging. One out of three. His first ever at bat against Kyle Finnegan. And now the kick of the pitch. Fastball hit on the ground toward the middle. Crossing over to get it. Garcia across the body. Throw to Meneses in plenty of time. And this game is over. A Curly W's in the books. So is a three-game losing streak for the Nationals. Derek Law's two scoreless innings. He gets a win. Hunter Harvey, a hold, and Kyle Finnegan the save. And the Nationals are on the field to celebrate a victory here in game one of this four-game series. A Curly W in the books in Miami. Final score, the Nationals 3 and the Marlins 1.
The Nats bullpen in this 3-1 win at the Marlins on Friday night was awesome. Honestly, this may be the best single game performance by the Nats bullpen so far in this regular season. I mean, this was true dominance. This was shutout pitching with a lot of strikeouts. I mean, this is exactly what you want from a bullpen in today's game here. So you had three Nats relievers on Friday night, combining for four scoreless innings with seven strikeouts versus no walks. How about Derek Law? What got into him in this game? Two scoreless innings, five strikeouts, including three strikeouts in a perfect bottom of the sixth. Hunter Harvey, a perfect bottom of the eighth with a swinging strikeout. And Kyle Finnegan, a perfect bottom of the ninth with a swinging strikeout. And he got the save. We haven't seen a ton of Harvey and Finnegan lately, so perhaps they're fresh. They certainly look good. And Derek Law was terrific.
I'll be honest, when in a 1-1 game, you see Derek Law come into the sixth inning, I'm thinking to myself, are we really doing this again? Is he really the best option here from what we've seen from him? You know, why not Dylan Flora? Why not somebody else? Well, he went and struck out the side in the sixth, then came back and nearly did it again in the seventh. So all credit to him. That was much needed by him. Combined those three guys in four innings, 47 pitches and 35 strikes. So that's really good stuff. Glad to see that. And Kyle Finnegan quietly is starting to dominate again with very little drama. He's now got the ERA at 2.38, still just the one blown save in Cincinnati. So 8 of 9 in saves situations and a 2.38 ERA. I feel like this is a carbon copy of what we saw last year. You were nervous about him early on. First week was really rough. And then kind of quietly, he became dominant for the vast majority of the season before it kind of came apart on him at the end. So good to see that. You hope he can keep it up. But especially in a game like this, where it felt like, you know, one swing can change this game, that bullpen really had to be perfect, and they absolutely were.
They were. And yeah, Finnegan, to your point about the stats, 2.38 ERA, the whip is at 0.97. I bet that surprises people because it doesn't feel like he has those numbers, but he does. You know, now you'd like to see some more strikeouts. Only has 10 and 11 in a third innings, but he has been effective, 8 for 9 on saves. With Derek Law, yes, he's out there a lot. He leads the Nats in appearances this regular season, 13. He's thrown 16 innings, the most for any Nats reliever. So yeah, we have seen a good bit of Derek Law that is kind of odd, but he did look good in this game.
And also nice, to a point you keep making over and over again, nice to see a guy go two innings and they got through a game with only three relievers. How about that? They didn't need the fourth or the fifth reliever to get through this game.
They did. And I noticed this recently. I forget which post-game presser it was, but Davey did bring it up that they don't have an off day in the immediate future. So, you know, they need to get innings from these guys. Like, you can't keep doing it one inning here, one inning there. And, you know, when guys pitch well, you can lean on them for multiple innings. And the pitch thing is a big thing too, right? It's not just that we've seen guys only pitch for an inning, maybe even less. It's all these pitches that are thrown in these innings, these like laborious outings. You did not have that in this game. These guys were able to get in, get out. The game was super quick, and the Nats pitching in this game ended up being really good. Well, the Nats offense in this 3-1 win at the Marlins on Friday night, 8 hits, all of which were singles, 3 walks. The Nats went 2 for 9 with runners in scoring position. The Nats got 4 of their 8 hits from their bottom two batters, Trey Lipscomb and Jacob Young. Lipscomb, the starting third baseman. Young, your starting center fielder. But the biggest hit of the game came from Joey Meneses, as this rise of Joey Meneses continues. This has been encouraging. Still not hitting for power, but he is hitting, and he is coming through in some big RBI spots. You know, our initial nickname for Joey Meneses was Joey Four Bags. That really has not been applicable for a while now, but he's Joey RBI machine or Joey run producer. I don't know. We got to come up with something catchier than that, but this is what he did last season, and he's starting to do it here again this season. So Meneses in this game on Friday night was a National starting first baseman at number 3 batter, 1 for 4 with the hit of the game, a 2-run single. He in the Nats 2-run 8th had a tie-breaking 1-out, bases loaded, 2-run single to center field for a 3-1 Nats lead. It feels like over the last, I don't know, week or so, a switch has been flipped and the 2023 Joey Meneses is back in full effect. We're seeing him do exactly what he did do for so much of last season.
Right. And it's up the middle, everything. And look, I know he didn't get credit for a hit for it, but the previous at bat that scored the first run with the bases loaded, he scorched 106 miles an hour, happened to be on the ground, and Arias was there to make a really nice play to start the double play. So he comes up again in the eighth, and you're just thinking to yourself, can he somehow get the ball in the air? I mean, there were so many ground balls in this game. It felt like all night they're doing that. Can he somehow just elevate a ball a little bit. And here's the difference between those two. Okay. In the sixth inning, 106 miles an hour. So he hit this one hard. The launch angle was 4 degrees and the distance in the air was 114 feet. In the eighth, 99.3 miles an hour. So he didn't hit it quite as hard. The launch angle was 9 degrees. Not a lot, but just enough to allow the ball to carry 180 feet and clear the infield. And it's that small margin that makes all the difference in the world. So this is who he is. If he ends up hitting for some power, great. But I think at this point, you just have to acknowledge what are his strengths. It's coming up in those spots, making contact, and finding a hole up the middle or to the opposite field and getting that runner home. And while you'd love for him to be able to do more than that, you'd love for him to be the guy that we all fell in love with in 2022. If that's not the case, but he is Joey Clutch, as he's been for, you know, the better part of two seasons now, you take that and you'd be thrilled with it. And I don't know about you, watching this game, it just felt to me like it was going to come down to a Meneses at bat with runners in scoring position. And it absolutely did. And more power to him. He came through and he's been doing it a lot more consistently here lately.
It's a funny thing with Meneses because he's a big dude. And so you look at him and you say, well, he should hit for power, right? Meneses is listed as being 6'3", 235 pounds. He is a presence in the batter's box. But as we know, hitting for power, it's not about what you look like or how much you can bench press or anything like that. I mean, the Nats' best power hitter this season has been CJ Abrams. He's listed as being a buck 91. He's listed as being 40 pounds lighter than Meneses, but has hit for a lot more power than Meneses. So it's just kind of funny how that is. But very nice to see Meneses doing as he is doing. Jacob Young, I mentioned him. He is an at starting center fielder and number 9 batter. 2 for 3 with a couple of singles. Also got credited with an outfield assist. Top of the third, a bunt single on a great bunt toward third base. Young in the Nats, 1 run 6, a leadoff opposite field single through the right side of the infield on a 1-2 pitch. And Young in the bottom of the fourth, credited with an outfield assist. He made the throw to second baseman Luis Garcia Jr. and Garcia then threw out Nick Gordon at home for the third out off a 2-out full count single by Vidal Brujan up the middle. So some of that good defense coming into play there.
They're turning double plays, which has been great. And that was a really nice relay. And if you saw on the replay of it, Abrams very astutely watching the whole play and calling out 4-4-4 so that Garcia would know where to throw the ball once he got it. So that was good. You had the Rosario double play on the 9-3. Two straight days, I think. They've done something like that. So that was good. And I want to go back. I forgot to mention before, on the Meneses hit, the clutch hit, let's give CJ Abrams credit for a great slide to avoid the tag at the plate. He could have been out, and he did the nice little swim move to get around the tag and score that extra run. So a good night for CJ Abrams in multiple ways, a good night for Luis Garcia in the field, all of them defensively. It's been really nice to see.
Yeah, Abrams as an at starting shortstop and number one batter went 1 for 3 with a single and a walk. You know, it's a funny deal with this Nats lineup. We just mentioned Garcia. He's becoming their regular cleanup batter, which is not what anyone would have anticipated. He certainly doesn't profile as your traditional number four batter. He's doing a good job this season. He on Friday night went 1 for 4 with a single, did strike out twice, but his overall numbers for the season are pretty good. Garcia, 341 on base percentage here for this regular season, but it's just a funny deal right now. The Nats, they don't hit for much power. We know that. And so like we just talked about Meneses, him having been struggling, and yet he still pretty regularly is like the number three batter, number four batter, number five batter. He was in the number three spot on Friday night. Garcia, the cleanup batter. Eddie Rosario, who is really struggling offensively, 0 for 4 on Friday night. He was an at's number six batter. We did see Joey Gallo get bumped down to that seven spot, but he was the designated hitter. I mean, a guy who is barely hitting for the Nats. He's the starting DH. This is just kind of how it is right now with this offense.
Yeah, look, it's a reflection of what they have at the moment and who, you know, is delivering or not. And I think it really boils down to who does Davey trust with this, you know, game on the line. And right now he's going to trust Meneses more than anyone else. And so that's why I felt like, okay, Abrams and Winker, they've been getting on base and even Young as the nine hitter in front of them. So you got to have somebody up there that can put the bat on the ball and get the runners in. And Garcia's been hitting the ball hard. This isn't the Luis Garcia slap single to the opposite field all the time. He is hitting the ball with some authority, and that's been really nice to see. But after that, I mean, there's just not a lot going on. And I got to say, watching the Rosario and Gallo at bats right now, it is painful. It is tough, some of these at bats. Joey Gallo, 3 more strikeouts, 3 straight games with 3 strikeouts. And he hadn't won in this game. He gets ahead in the count 3-0. I think, all right, here you go. pick your pitch you want to swing at and take a rip at it. He ends up taking three straight strikes. Now, one of them was off the plate and was called, but the other two were over the zone. He is striking out, not just striking out a lot, but striking out looking a lot. This looks like a guy who isn't even confident in himself to go ahead and swing the bat. He's almost like looking for walks, I wonder, the way things are going right now. It is not fun to watch. And Rosario is kind of the same thing. A whole lot of weak contact, a lot of ground balls from him. I mean, those two guys now are hitting respectively 100 and 122. Rosario has a 324 OPS, not OBP, OPS, 324. And Gallo is at 597 just because he's hit a few home runs and draws a few walks. But man, oh man, they are getting nothing out of those spots right now.
It really stands out with Gallo, 43 strikeouts on the regular season. That's more than double the next highest strikeout total by a Nats player. Lane Thomas is 20. I mean, Gallo is striking out like crazy. And, you know, you maybe could live with even that high of a strikeout rate if he was hitting homers. He's not. And it's kind of like, okay, what exactly are we doing here if you're not going to be hitting home runs? He has drawn some walks, but they do not make up for the lack of homers and for the oh-so many strikeouts. We mentioned Trey Lipscomb. He, in this game, was the Nats' starting third baseman and number eight batter, 2-for-4 with the two singles, each of which came on a 1-2 pitch. So we saw him at first base the other day. He's back at third base for this game. I guess, is it just going to kind of be mixing and matching in terms of where Lipscomb plays in this latest in at the major league level?
I've kind of given up trying to figure out what the plan is here. I'm not sure if there is a plan. It may be day by day. And I think it's a lot of it's a reflection of who else is out there. I think Dave's just trying to find offense right now. And so if Meneses really does hit better when he's playing the field, maybe you'll see more of that. And he plays first base. And so now Lipscomb's at third. Also, Nick Senzel has been sick the last couple of days, so that probably has something to do with it as well. I mean, on the one hand, it's nice to know you have this kid who you're comfortable putting anywhere in the field. On the other hand, it's a rookie. Do you really want to do that to him? I mean, it's the kind of stuff you do to Illamar Vargas. It's not usually the kind of thing you want to do with a rookie, but I give him credit. Trey shrugs it all off. He says, I've been doing this my whole life. When he went to college at Tennessee, he bounced around positions based on what their needs were. He was comfortable with it. He's done it in the minors. Now he's doing it in the majors. So if it was somebody that you really felt like, okay, we know he's going to be a third baseman in the long run and we're hurting his development by doing this, then you worry about it. But maybe this is who he is and he's comfortable with it and seems to be doing all right with it. So I guess you don't make too big a deal out of the fact that there is no set position for him.
Yeah, and I don't know that there has to be. I mean, Davey used the comp of Ben Zobrist, and if that's how you view Trey Lipscomb, then maybe his position is that he has no set position, and if he's just playing a bunch, then that's as good as having a set position and playing a bunch. I mean, I think we're all trying to figure out, like, he can be a piece for the future, but is he a starting piece or is he more a depth piece? You know, is he more like a guy who helps you in the way like Danny Espinosa ultimately helped the Nats of the previous run, where he's good off the bench, he can start for you for a while, but on a really good team, he maybe isn't an everyday player. But we see good teams have people like this. I mean, I think about the guy out of Virginia, Chris Taylor for the Dodgers, right? You played a bunch of different positions, but play a lot can be impactful, and maybe that can be Trey Lipscomb. We'll see.
The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you could still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Here's a special deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription. But only for our listeners for a limited time at babbel.com/natschat. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/natschat. That's spelled babbel.com/natschat. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I wanted to get him here. You know, he's really close. He's been in West Palm. So to get him here and get him with the guys, you know, and, you know, get him and watch him throw a bullpen was good, you know, and it's good for him too because he's put tremendous amount of work in. He's done great. So and we're getting closer. So I'm excited about his progress. You know, I know that somewhere along the line, whether it's, you know, towards the middle or the end of this summer, he'll be on the mound for us if everything goes well. So we're excited about that.
We have a Cade Cavalli update. This was nice to get on Friday. So Cade Cavalli, he's been on the 60-day injured list since March 26 as he recovers from Tommy John surgery that he underwent in March 2023. The anticipation has been that he could be back pitching for the Nats at the major league level this season in, say, June. But he now is with the ball club, and it sounds like we have a bit of a timeline in terms of what we can expect here.
Yeah, so because he was playing in Miami and he's rehabbing in West Palm Beach, it made sense for him to make the short drive down there and be with them. And I'm not there, but by all accounts, everybody who was there, he said he was all smiles. He's in a good mood. I think he sees the finish line finally. And, you know, not every player does this. I appreciate this about Cade. I don't know if the team loves that he does this. He kind of spills the beans a little bit about what the plan is. And he came out and said mid-May is when he expects to start the rehab assignment. And do the math from that. It's typically a month. You get 30 days as a pitcher. That lines him up for mid-June for him to make his return. Things can change, of course, between now and then. And maybe it speeds up. Maybe it slows down. But that sounded very encouraging. He's about to start facing live hitters for the first time. And we're probably about 2 weeks away or so from him going on a minor league rehab assignment. And now it's just building the arm back up and getting him ready. And I can tell you how much he's been waiting for this. Let's remember, for those who haven't, you know, followed this every step of the way or maybe have forgotten along the way, you're talking about a kid who, first round pick in 2020, thought he'd be on kind of a fast track to the big leagues. And we thought in 2022, we might even see him at the end of the year. And he dealt with the minor thing back then. 2023, we're like, okay, when are they going to call him up? When they're going to call him up? They finally do it in August, makes his major league debut. It didn't go all that well. It was a really hot, sweaty night. He was having trouble gripping the ball. Be like, all right, first start, let's see what else he can do. And then immediately he gets shut down with a shoulder issue. So we don't see him again that year. Comes back to spring training in 2023. And the feeling is, okay, he has a good spring. He's in the opening day rotation. And then mid-March, he's looking great against the Mets one afternoon at Port St. Lucie. And then all of a sudden, one pitch, there goes the elbow. And now he's out for a year plus, as it turns out. So this is a guy they've been waiting on for a long time. And he himself has been itching for a long time to be out there pitching for them every 5 days. We're finally getting closer. There's still more steps to go. I have seen, unfortunately, guys get this far and then something else happens. So you don't want to assume anything. But by all accounts, it's good news. And we're finally getting close to Cade Cavalli pitching for the Nationals again.
I'm excited to see him. Like you said, we've been waiting on this for a while. I mean, Cade Cavalli, the last of four consecutive first-round picks by the Nats who were starting pitchers, and not a single one of them yet has panned out. 2017, Seth Romero, that was a disaster. 2018, Mason Denneberg, plagued by injury. 2019, Jackson Rutledge, plagued by injury and some struggles. And 2020, Cade Cavalli. I mean, if you would have said in 2020, it'll be 2024 and not a single one of those guys by 2024 will be an established starting pitcher for the Nats at the major league level, you would have said, oh boy, that's not good. And it's not good. But hopefully this season, we can get Cavalli and Rutledge going at the major league level. We'll see. I mean, mid-June would coincide potentially with the Trevor Williams carriage turning back into a pumpkin. Now, hopefully that does not happen. But if, you know, if you're looking at last season and saying, okay, you know, if Williams starts to struggle a little bit, maybe that'll be right when Cavalli is ready to go, to say nothing of Jackson Rutledge. This is good. I mean, I had kind of budgeted for this season to be maybe not a lost season for Cavalli, but we know how it is for guys coming off Tommy John. You miss the season in which you undergo the surgery, and then that next season, the comeback season, is usually a season in which, you know, you come back mid-season, late season. You can't really count on the guy for that year. Tommy John really means 2 years are lost. Maybe this can be a season in which Cavalli is an effective starting pitcher for the Nats over like the second half of the season. That would be really good to see.
Well, and the idea would be to get, you know, let's say it's 15 starts or so, maybe even more than that, maybe closer to 18. If he can do that, have a little bit of success and build the innings count up, it sets him up for next year where you say, okay, there shouldn't be any restrictions on him, you would hope, at that point. And, you know, you'd like to see enough of him, kind of like we saw with Mackenzie Gore last year, to make you say, okay, if he can just do that with some consistency, he's now going to be somebody they can count on at the top of their rotation. We just haven't seen enough of him yet to know what he's really going to be. You want to believe, we have this image in our mind of what Cade Cavalli is supposed to be, but we don't have enough body of work to truly know that. So when he does come back, it really is just about pitching every fifth day in the big leagues, hopefully having some success, staying healthy, and now positioning himself to really be a part of this next year, not just for part of the year, but for the whole year as a workhorse, hopefully by that point.
You know, we don't talk about Mason Denneberg almost ever. The Nats took him out of a Florida high school with the number 27 overall pick in 2018. He is pitching for Fredericksburg. The numbers aren't pretty. His name doesn't come up often. Is he considered a lost cause at this point? I know he's dealt with a lot of injury, but man, it doesn't feel like there's really any momentum with him in terms of him being viewed as a real piece for the Nats moving forward.
When you talk to club officials about, you know, who's part of the future, what pitchers are they excited about, his name does not come up. I'll just, you know, admit that's the case. And doesn't mean that he couldn't still, he would be a late bloomer at this point. But I mean, you point out, you're drafted in 2018 and you're still in low A ball in 2024 and not exactly dominating at that level either. The odds are stacked against you. So it's unfortunate. This is always the fear. You draft a high school pitcher. Sometimes they work out, but more often than not, they don't. And there's so many things that can go wrong along the way. And unfortunately, in his case, a lot of them have gone wrong. And I mean, that stretch, and even go further back, 2016, Carter Kieboom, 17, Romero, 18, Denneberg. I still want to believe Rutledge can be a part of this. It's a little slower than they would have liked, of course. So you hope at least with 19 moving forward, Rutledge, Cavalli, House, there is still reason to think that these guys are going to be important pieces for them in the future. But there was a stretch there prior to that where, man, they got nothing out of their first round picks.
Not good. Not good, as we have discussed. Hit us up on X at Nats_chat. You can email the show, natschatpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on YouTube. Just search Nats Chat. Our YouTube handle is at Nats Chat Podcast. And please click on the thumbs up button and please click on subscribe. We very much appreciate that. We have a website that you can check out too, natschatpodcast.com. All Nationals radio highlights on Nats Chat are courtesy of 106.7 The Fan. Game 2 for the Nats at the Marlins Saturday afternoon at 4:10. Mitchell Parker will be the Nats starting pitcher. For Mark Zuckerman, I'm Al Galdi. We thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on the Nats Chat Podcast.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.